From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And today we're going to talk about children in the 21st state. As with many other states across the country, an increasing number of young people here are experiencing a mental health crisis. The COVID-19 pandemic and how our society responded to it played a significant role in driving that. And to make matters worse, nearly 40% of young people who experienced depression were not able to get mental health care. That's according to an Illinois government report published in February. The problem may be even more pronounced among low-income families. There's a program in Illinois that's supposed to assess and help children going through mental health crises. It's called Screening, Assessment, and Support Services, or SAS for short. The idea is a child in a family with Medicaid or maybe even no insurance makes a call to a hotline. The state then connects them with a nonprofit that's supposed to help the young person with their mental health problems, up to and including thoughts of suicide. But an investigation by reporters at public radio station WBEZ-FM in Chicago found there were more complaints in the past year about children waiting hours just for an initial assessment. And in many cases, the state didn't even know if the children who are screened actually got mental health support or treatment. One provider described the system as like a Cadillac driving nowhere. The two reporters who investigated the system for WBEZ joined us back in March to talk about this. Sarah Karp covers education, and Kristen Schorsch covers public health and Cook County government. Because our program's on tape today, we're not taking calls live, but we'd love to hear your thoughts. So send an email to talk@21stshow.org. talk@21stshow.org. Okay, here now is my conversation with WBEZ reporters Sarah Karp and Kristen Schorsch. Sarah, Kristen, welcome back to the 21st Show to both of you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
And before we proceed, I just want to warn listeners, we are going to be continuing to talk about suicide and self-harm. This may not be suitable for everyone. And if you or someone you know is experiencing a mental health crisis, you can get help from the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline by calling or texting 988. Very simple number, 988. And although we are going to be talking about a state hotline that failed the people who called it, 988 is a separate system. So, Kristen, I want to begin with you. Can you just start by talking a little bit more about the intentions and goals of this Screening, Assessment, and Support Services, or SAS, program?
Sure. So the state of Illinois created SAS about 20 years ago, and the idea was that this would be a gateway for children who are from low-income families on Medicaid health insurance or no insurance to be able to get help immediately through having an acute crisis. So we're talking about kids who are having suicidal thoughts or threatening to harm others. And so this is really an equalizer of sorts. You know, it's incredibly hard to be able to see a provider if you have no insurance or Medicaid compared to private insurance, for example, because there are just more doctors willing to treat kids who have private insurance. So SAS has been around for about 20 years. And what Sarah and I were interested is, you know, is this program effective? What are the outcomes? What are actually happening to kids who go through this program? And the way it works is that there is a state hotline that schools and hospitals call the most. And essentially that is supposed to be the way that you route kids to immediate help. But what we found is that, you know, obviously there's been a lot of hiccups in this system. And we found that, you know, in general, there are not a lot of places to send kids, which is part of the big problem, whether that's to outpatient therapy or to an inpatient hospital bed. But we also found that the state is not really keeping a good eye on what's actually happening to kids flowing through the system. You know, what they're called are like SAS providers. A lot of nonprofit organizations, more than two dozen throughout the state, are part of SAS. And they are supposed to get out to kids within about 90 minutes of this call to the state hotline. And what we found is that in about, that the state was missing about 40% of the data about kids who were supposed to get immediate help. And so obviously right there is we don't know what's happening to thousands of kids who are in acute crisis.
What's the reason for the, and I guess we can get into that a little bit later in terms of why the state's not keeping record. You know, let's put a pin in that. Sarah, let me bring you into the conversation now. Maybe you can just say more about some of the things that you heard from the children and families about what their experiences were actually like calling this hotline, trying to get an assessment, trying to get treatment.
For sure. Well, I'll tell you about the story of one mother who had, whose child had a SAS call on him from a school. And, you know, basically she was saying that she knew her son was struggling a bit. But one day, it was a Friday, he went to school, and then she gets a call saying that he's in distress, and he's saying that he has no value, he doesn't see a point in the world, he doesn't want to go on, and that the school tells her, we're required to call this hotline, and they're supposed to send an assessment worker out here to assess him and figure out what is the best place for him to go to get what he needs to get out of this very dark spot that he's in. And then the person at the school proceeds to tell her, but they're supposed to be here in 90 minutes. But I'm telling you, they're not going to come. Your child's going to sit here all day for hours in this office. And then the mother, whose name is Melina, said, what can I do? How can I, you know, prevent this? Because, you know, you hate to think of your child sitting there like in distress for hours in the office in a school. So they say, well, come and get him and take him straight to the psychiatric hospital and he can get assessed there. And then he'll be there. So there's more of a chance that he might get a bed in this psychiatric hospital. So already it's not working exactly the way it's supposed to work. But she doesn't have a car, so she Ubers to a school and then Ubers with him and her two other children to the psychiatric hospital. She winds up sitting there for 5 hours, she says, before she can get him. The assessor is there to talk to him. Finally, you know, she's sitting in this waiting room with her three children. She describes this waiting room as cold, as unwelcoming. Everybody there is stressed out. Nobody's, you know, asking, how are you doing? No one's even offering them water. And then eventually he gets called in and she says the assessment is really quick. It was only like 5 minutes. By then, you know, her son had, you know, was emotionally in a different place. And he basically told them, you know, I'm fine. Like he had decided perhaps in his mind, like, I don't want to wind up staying here. This is not a good place to stay. She winds up being told, he's okay for outpatient. Take him home. Here's a list of places that you can call. This is a Friday, so call them on Monday. And she winds up taking him home, and she's completely distraught because, you know, she says, I don't know. Is he going to kill himself? Is he not going to kill himself? What is going on with my son? They didn't tell me what to do. You know, do I ask him questions? Do I not ask him questions? What should I do? Eventually, she tells him, he says that he's very tired. She says, okay. And she tells him, you know, you can go into your bedroom and go to sleep, but leave the door open. And, you know, she winds up, you know, basically looking at her child's sleep a lot of the night and just very, very worried. And yeah. So in this situation, he never got the help that he needed. And it wound up being a very, very trying situation.
We actually have a clip of Melina from your reporting. Let's take a listen to that.
They give me the paper, but they don't give you, like, what to do, what I should do. I mean, he's saying that thing, he want to kill himself. Maybe he's not going to do it. Maybe he's going to do it. I don't know what is happening in his mind. He was so, so low, that we didn't know how to cheer him up.
So yes, Sarah, go ahead. What happens next?
So, I mean, that's the thing. So eventually she decides that she's just going to call around and she calls a couple of the numbers on the list. They all have waiting lists. She actually is a very involved member in her community and in her kids' schools. And so she has some sources on her own and winds up finding an organization that can eventually take him and give him weekly therapy. And he's still doing that. This just happened last year, and he's still doing that. But she's still wondering if he needs more help. She says he still can get in very dark places, and you know she thinks that he's learning some strategies to deal with depression. But she's just not sure. And you know she says you know he's fighting. We're fighting. We're all fighting to try to make it through this.
Let me just take a moment to remind listeners, if you're just tuning in, this is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we're talking about a report from WBEZ, the public radio station in Chicago, looking at a crisis line that was supposed to help low-income children get the help they need, whether it's with a mental health problem, up to and including thoughts of suicide. We're talking with reporters who found that system is not working the way it's intended, and people are waiting hours and hours for even an initial assessment. And the state doesn't even know if a lot of the people who call for help are actually getting the sort of support and treatment they need in the medium term or the long term. We talked about this with WBEZ reporters Sarah Karp and Kristen Schorsch. Because we're revisiting a conversation that originally aired in March, we're not taking calls live, but you can always let us know what you think on our voicemail line 24 hours a day. The number is 217-300-2121. Again, day or night, 217-300-2121. We hear all the feedback, we take it seriously, and we do share some of your responses on air from time to time. Okay, back now to the conversation. So, Kristen, we heard there the story of Melina, who was, because, as Sarah said, was a sort of connected to her community, active in her community, was able to get help. But a lot of families end up, as you say, crisscrossing the state, chasing the same beds. Can you talk about the struggle to actually connect with treatment and the lengths that some families have to go through?
Yeah. So one of the things we found, if you want to think about it, is like the most extreme end of care, right? That a hospital would need to be hospitalized. The issue is that there are not a lot of hospitals in Illinois that have psychiatric beds for kids. So, you know, there are about 200 hospitals or so in the state, only about 15% have a psych bed for a child. So what happens is you have families who are showing up in hospital ERs around the state, and they're waiting. For some kids, they might wait longer than others. We heard one of the biggest reasons that kids are waiting in the ERs, we're talking days to, you know, more than a week. In some cases, at least a month. One of the things we heard is that children who are in the foster care system and have what's called youth care health insurance have the hardest time getting a bed. And that the reason that's happening is because the state is supposed to have what's called a discharge plan. So before the kid even gets to the hospital wants to know, when this child is done with treatment, how are they going to get home? Where are they going to go? Right. And the state often doesn't have those plans. And we know that what's been happening for a very long time is that these children are getting stuck in hospitals with nowhere to go. They're languishing for months at a time. So hospitals are very concerned about taking even more of those kids. We heard that when a SAS provider, you know, calls around looking for a bed, that if the child has Medicaid, that's already a red flag. Hospital doesn't want to take a child with Medicaid, perhaps because the reimbursement rate is really low. They just don't get paid enough to cover the cost of that kid's care. We heard issues about race. You know, hospitals asking, what's the race of the child? We heard if a child is autistic or even has a few stitches, that it's hard to place that child. So there are a lot of barriers to getting a kid a bed, when at the same time, there are very few beds even available. So the most of these beds happen to be in the Chicago area. The reason why we're describing it in the story is like kids crisscrossing the state is because we would hear from providers and families downstate and in central Illinois that they often had to travel up to the Chicago area if there was a bed available. And in some cases, we did hear of Chicago families having to go south, but it was much more common for children in more rural parts of the state to come to Chicago. And then when you think of just the city of Chicago, on the entire south side, which is a really vast region, there's not one psychiatric bed for a child. So there's not a lot of places to go. So what happens is you have the bottlenecks in the ERs where the kids are languishing. And then, you know, we heard from like clinics and, you know, the outpatient piece of this story, you'd have children who were in a hospital with a psychiatric bed. Because there's not a lot of therapists who are willing to even take Medicaid or insurance at all these days, those kids would come back to their pediatrician, and that pediatrician did not have the skills, the ability to treat that child. So that it just creates this vicious cycle of the child going back through and through the SAS program. Sarah and I found that over the last 5 years, at least one in three kids who go through the SAS program are frequent flyers to the program, meaning they just keep going through and through SAS. They're really not getting the help that they need.
And some families even going out of state, I gather, from your work.
Yeah, we heard from SAS providers who said, You know, imagine that every SaaS provider and any other provider who's looking for a psych bed for a child, they have the same short list, right? So they're all competing for the same beds. And, you know, you heard us describe kind of the barriers to getting a bed if you're coming through SaaS, which is supposed to kind of give you a leg up in the system to be like an equalizer of sorts. But yes, one SaaS provider said that they fax, I believe, every 12 hours. They're faxing the same kind of referral package, as they called it, to hospitals, not only across Illinois, but to Iowa, to Missouri, to Tennessee. And then, you know, they described how if a child does get into a hospital bed, say in Tennessee, they take an ambulance to get there, but then they have to find their way back home. So imagine like the family has to find a way back for their kid in Tennessee to get back to wherever they live in Illinois. So it's just this very, very broken system.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't Uber from Tennessee. All right. We need to take a break. We're going to continue.
It'd be incredibly expensive, right?
Yeah. Right. We're going to continue this conversation when we come back. We're talking about a report from WBEZ looking at a program that is not working the way it's intended to help young people with dealing with mental health crisis. We're talking with Sarah Karp and Kristen Schorsch of WBEZ. More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we are talking today about a report from public radio station WBEZ. The headline is, "An Illinois Lifeline Program for Suicidal Kids Has Become a Bridge to Nowhere for Many." This is about a program that's known as SAS, that stands for Screening, Assessment, and Support Services. The idea is a child and a family on the Medicaid program, state insurance for people who are low income, or maybe they even have no insurance, calls a hotline. If it works properly, the state quickly connects them with immediate support and medium to long-term support through a nonprofit that's supposed to help the young person with their mental health problems, which can range all the way up to including thoughts of suicide. But what this report found is that the program is not working the way it's intended. People wait hours and hours for an assessment, or they're told that no one's really going to come. You're kind of on your own. And the state doesn't even really know if people are getting the support in a lot of these cases. We're talking about this with the two reporters who wrote the story for WBEZ. Kristen Schorsch covers public health and Cook County government. Sarah Karp covers education. I want to play another clip from your stories. This is Melissa Coleman, who is a senior intervention specialist with Metropolitan Family Services, which serves the South Suburbs and part of the South Side in Chicago. Let's listen to what she had to say.
It does not make me feel good when someone asks me what's the race of the person, because it doesn't matter. And some hospitals will ask you what the person's zip code is. Why? I don't even understand that part.
Yeah, that is interesting. Let's dive into that. Sarah, can you talk about what do we understand about why these questions are being asked and people are being screened in this way?
Well, you know, one thing is that I think the big question is, why are they being screened that way? I mean, I don't know exactly why it would matter. Like she said, what someone's race is or what someone's zip code is. But I think the fundamental issue here is that, you know, because there's such a dearth of psychiatric hospitals in the state of Illinois, they can be choosy. And they're trying, you know, it seems to me like in many ways, they're trying to, you know, get the patients who can pay, whose insurance pays the most. So private insurance, you know, pays, not only pays more, but also we hear a lot about Medicaid paying late, which can create a lot of problems for hospitals. And then also, you know, the ones that don't need as much support. Now, I don't see how race or zip code would indicate support, but a lot of what we did hear was about, like, you know, autistic kids or kids that are developmentally delayed or kids that are aggressive are much, much harder to place. And part of that is because there's a staffing shortage. And, you know, for some of the children, they need to have one-on-one support. So it's very difficult if you're low on staff. So, you know, I would say that what she's talking about, what Melissa Coleman's talking about is that there's some level of also, you know, racism here where these hospitals, you know, are discriminating because, you know, maybe because of biases or stereotypes. I don't really know, but it does seem like something that maybe we should dig deeper into. You know, is it harder for kids for Black kids to get psychiatric hospitalization than other kids, and why?
Kristen, what does the state have to say for itself here, the Illinois Department of Healthcare and Family Services?
Right. So HFS, which runs Medicaid for the state of Illinois, they oversee the SAS program, and it has largely been outsourced to private Medicaid insurance companies. So like Blue Cross, for example, has private insurance and also has a Medicaid plan for low-income families in Illinois. So, I mean, the state acknowledged that they need to do better. But they did, you know, obviously defend this program in a way. They said that the Medicaid insurers follow the kids, for example, who are frequent flyers to SAS, that they follow them closely. But they also said that they are launching, and they did launch in December, this new program called Pathways to Success. So the idea with Pathways is that it's supposed to fill in perhaps some of the holes through SAS. It's supposed to provide more intensive care coordination and support services to kids in their communities. But, you know, what Sarah and I pointed out is that SAS providers are supposed to be providing care coordination, and so are the private Medicaid insurers separately. And yet the state wants to spend an estimated $300 million a year when Pathways is fully implemented. So, I mean, you know, obviously the state is acknowledging that they need to do better, and they have, you know, somewhat of a plan going forward, right, through this new Pathways program. But I mean, I think that with Sarah and I found we had a lot of questions about accountability. If the Medicaid insurers are largely in charge of SAS, then why is so much data missing? Why do we not know what's happening with all these children? There have been no corrective action plans. That's just kind of like a form of right, like a form of monitoring from the state against these insurers over 5 years. And yet all the data we asked for was over at least a 5-year period. You know, the state did say that there's an outside auditor that found that some remediation plans that the insurance companies provided to the state to fix some of the issues at SAS, that they accepted that. But still, we have a lot of questions about accountability. I mean, this is taxpayer money, and that these are kids who are coming from low-income families in a program that is meant to help them in an acute crisis, right?
I want to go to the phones now. We've got Christine is calling in from Quincy on line 4. Christine, thank you for calling in today.
Hi. I just went through this within the last 60 days. My grandson, who I'm his legal guardian, he suffered from a trauma on top of trauma, and I'm really familiar with the SAS program. And it's just the system is completely broke. It's not working. Being in Quincy, he's been admitted to Blessing Pediatric Psych Ward multiple times for a 5, 6, 7-day period. His risk level went from suicidal thoughts to an actual attempt. He actually OD'd with everything in the medicine cabinet, and then he sliced his throat.
My.
He had to be life-flighted down to St. Louis. And the SAS workers came to the hospital, but they did the same thing they've done the last 5 times, and you never see him again. And the absolutely frustrating part is, and I understand there's addicts and people need help, but if you're an addict, you have no problem getting into a 30-day, 60, 90-day program, but there's nothing for these children. 6, 7 days does not do it. If it did, it wouldn't have went from a thought to an attempt.
Yeah. Well, Christine, I'm so sorry you're going through that, but I want to thank you so much for sharing your story with us, and I wish you,
thank you,
and your grandson the best.
Thank you.
Sarah, that is heartbreaking, obviously, to listen to that. Does that resonate with the stories, though, in your reporting?
Yes, and you know, one of the things that I think she's bringing up is that, you know, we do not really know very much about the quality of the psychiatric hospitals, but also, you know, some kids require this next level, like residential treatment, which is like where you might stay for a very extended period of time and get regular treatment. And there's a big problem in that next level too. And actually earlier in this year, I worked on a story where parents were saying that, you know, there's so few places in Illinois that you can get placement for your children in a residential place, and that they are having to go places like New Jersey or New York. Or so I think it's so many levels. The system is just so broken for the kids her grandson is in literally a fight for his life. You know, that's how serious this is. And then we just sort of don't have a safety net for these children. I mean, it's really heartbreaking.
Kristen, we're almost to the end of our time together. You mentioned the state is putting in this new program. What's next for you? What are you going to be watching for in the weeks and months and years ahead?
Yeah, well, I'll be honest, you know, Sarah and I have reached out to a lot of state lawmakers. We've reached out to Governor Pritzker's office to really want to talk about the findings in our story, to really understand the transparency and accountability issues that we found with this program, which is obviously trickling down to the families. And we've received very little response. I would like to hear what lawmakers think about this program and the governor's office thinks about this program, and if they plan to fix anything. I will say, we just today learned that there is going to be a hearing in Springfield among state lawmakers about the SAS program today. So we're going to be tuning in to hear what that is going to be about. And hopefully that kicks off maybe the first of many conversations, because, you know, a lot of people that Sarah and I talked to across the state, you know, think that this program, think that SAS is a really, really important, vital program for families, but it's just vastly under-resourced. And so they want it to stay, but they want it to see it get more attention and more help so that the families can get help.
Kristen Schorsch and Sarah Karp are reporters at WBEZ. Thank you both for sharing your time and reporting with us today on the 21st Show.
Thanks
for having us.